I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hey folks, Tom Valentino here on Friday afternoon. Last night, Travis and I talked about Jeopardy's search for a new host and all the problems that came with executive producer Mike Richards getting the job. Well, as it turns out, before we could even get the episode out to you today, Mike Richards resigned as the host of Jeopardy this morning. Travis said at the end of our discussion that if something was going to happen, it would be quick, and we did not know just how right Travis was going to be. The search process, which I guess is going to resume now, has been super interesting since it began months ago with all the different guest hosts Jeopardy has brought in and the palace intrigue that's gone along with the whole deal. So even if we didn't know at the time we recorded that Mike Richards was on his way out, pretty much everything that we covered here is still very relevant today. Enjoy.
The nail in the coffin!
Welcome to the 200th episode of The Nail in the Coffin. I'm Tom Valentino. He is Travis Yulee. We are part of the world-famous Evergreen Podcast Network. Trav, did you ever think we would make it to 200 of these?
Yeah, of course. I'm the eternal optimist. I knew we would make it to 200.
Well, that's one of us. No, it's pretty cool, though. I'm not going to lie. It's been almost six full years now, and we've covered a lot of ground. I think we've evolved quite a bit over the years, but it's been a fun ride, and here we are.
Yeah, good run so far. Let's keep it going.
All right. Well, this was not the subject that I would have guessed that we would lead off a milestone episode with, but it has been far and away the most interesting story that I've seen this week. And I know, given your interest in the show, it certainly a story that's probably got your attention as well. The long and drawn out process to find the successor for Alex Trebek as the new permanent host of Jeopardy finally came to a conclusion. We have a new host. We have two new hosts, I guess, technically. And, that should have been the end of that, but it apparently is not. Mike Richards is going to be the host of the regular syndicated daytime version. And Mayim Bialik, I think I got that right, Blossom.
You got it.
is going to be hosting the primetime specials. And apparently there's going to be more of those than there have been in the past, which is going to make that an actual worthwhile role.
Which, weird one, not to interrupt you, but you said more than there were in the past. When were they ever in the past?
Well,
I
like
can't
they had
ever
that,
recall them.
The
Tournament of Champions thing was it.
Yeah. I was going to say like the thing with, Brad Rutter and
Ken Jennings.
Holzhauer and Ken Jennings. And I feel like they've had a couple other things. Well, yeah, we can get into this later, but it sounds like they're going to do some different formats or, some special competitions and things like that outside of the daily grind, so to speak. So if Jeopardy's changing, I guess that's one way it's going to look a little different here moving forward. But the Mike Richards hire certainly raised a lot of eyebrows, and there was a little bit of a storm when the news first broke that he was getting the job. He was, of course, the executive producer and managed to hire himself. I guess technically it was somebody at Sony that was making that call ultimately. I think there were
flashbacks of Dick Cheney vetting vice president candidates.
A lot of people made that connection, but, some skeletons in Mike's closet there started to resurface. He was involved in some lawsuits with the Price is Right. And then there were some questions that started to surface about this whole guest host search and the way that entire process was conducted. And it seemed like at first this was all going to blow over. And then yesterday, we're recording here on Thursday night, so late afternoon Wednesday, the Ringer, Claire McNear, who is a fantastic reporter and has been covering the Jeopardy beat for the past year or two, wrote a fantastic book about Jeopardy. It was published, I think, last year, dropped what I would consider an absolute hammer, just going into a whole lot of detail about all of this and all of the issues around Mike Richards, including a podcast that he apparently hosted about 10 years ago, where he said an awful lot of problematic stuff to the point that apparently nobody from Sony knew that this existed. And when she reached out to them to ask them about it, it was deleted within a couple hours and almost all traces of the show were removed from the internet. Although, as you told me, nothing is ever truly deleted from the internet. So if you go digging enough, I think you could still find it. But yeah, I mean, I got a lot of thoughts on this and just the way this whole thing's gone. But, you know, you are the true Jeopardy diehard of the Nail. So I need your opinion on this and how the way this whole thing has unfolded.
Yeah, so I will admit, like, when they first started showing them with the guest hosts, first it was Ken Jennings. I thought he did really good. And then this Mike Richards guy, who I had no familiarity with. Like, I knew who he was because they told us who he was, but like, I had never seen, like, he's been on a couple other like garbage game shows before that no one listening here has probably ever seen either. But like, I didn't know who he was, but I thought he did a decent job. It seems like online I'm in the minority. Like, most people were not fans of his, but I thought he did a pretty good job. So whatever, like, I didn't really care. And then it came and went, a few more people came and went, and they went through this process. And before all this other stuff came out, I didn't really have a problem with him being the pick, because I honestly thought he was fine. Not particularly inspiring or interesting or fun or anything, but, you know, he'd get the job done. And then it's like, okay, he's in charge of picking the, or maybe not in charge, but he's guiding that process. He might not be the final decision maker, but he's definitely got a relatively significant voice in the room. And then they started talking about how he, like, the Ken Jennings, like, he forced his way in. Like, Mike Richards basically forced his way in.
That was hilarious, because that did not come out for a long time.
Right.
Because initially, what did Ken Jennings do? Like, 6 weeks? And then Richards jumped in for the next 2 weeks, and he came on his first episode and was like, well, there was a scheduling conflict, so...
All of it was very, like, believable.
Yeah, I was like, so they needed somebody, you know, with COVID and everything, travel's kind of difficult. We had a hard time bringing anybody in. So, you know, I'm just stepping in to fill in and keep things moving along here. Like, he was doing this real noble thing. And it just came out within the last few weeks that it was like, apparently, all the showrunners.
It's been hard to make Jennings work at get in there at all.
The showrunners were all like, not that strict. We're like, no, we'll totally make this work. This conflict isn't really a big deal. And he just ran in and was like, no, I'm gonna save the day.
I got this covered. We don't need you.
Yeah, that was pretty dubious. And then, as the story goes, apparently once it became clear that he was gonna be in the mix to get the job permanently, he supposedly recused himself from being part of the selection process. But at the same time, these focus groups that they were supposedly heavily relying on, he was in charge of which episodes they got to see.
Yeah.
So it's like,
he could easily, like, you know, put his thumb on the scale a little bit.
Exactly.
It's like, and we'll pick the one where I did really well, and then we'll pick this one where it didn't seem to go as well and see how it goes. And then who knows if that's actually what happened. But it sure seems like it's probably right up his alley at this point, right? Like, this article, there was one line in there that I think permanently made me against this guy, was where, and I don't remember what the exact line was, but it was basically like, all this guy wants to do is host a game show. He doesn't care which one. He just wants to host a game show. And I'll admit, I'm obviously very biased in this, Jeopardy doesn't deserve just a game show host. I think we can look at like most game shows and be like, okay, anyone could do this and it would be fine. There, I think personally that, like, I know you're a big Price is Right guy. Price is Right, like Bob Barker, great Price is Right host, but a little bit like Dirty Grandpa, right? And that was fine. And no one had a problem with it. Like, that's sort of like subtle, like.
Oh, a few people had a problem with it. There were lawsuits for him too.
Yeah, but he was beloved, right? Yeah. And it kind of fit with the atmosphere of the show. And like, you got Sajak like on the internet. He's like a climate denier and all this crap. And no one cares because I've said it a million times. I will stand by it. Wheel of Fortune is the idiot's game. I don't care what anybody says. It's for the people that are too stupid to get on Jeopardy. And so he fits in perfectly there. Trebek is like this moral compass of all game show hosts. So I don't want this slime ball now. I want him out. And it seems like you sent me a link before we got on here today of a I don't know if it qualifies as a report, but you know, sort of rumblings that Sony maybe will consider reversing course on this. And personally, I want to see it because as much as I love Jeopardy, I don't know that I would keep watching if it's this guy now. I feel like it taints it a little bit for me. It'll feel a little bit icky, and I don't know if I want to do that.
Yeah, so just for those who are trying to catch up on all this, Kate Arthur, editor-at-large from Variety, reported multiple sources close to the situation say the discovery of offensive remarks from the podcast, that's the podcast I had referenced a little while ago, sparked grave concern within the studio about whether Richard's public image may already be too damaged for him to be the face of the beloved quiz show. There's little doubt that Sony Pictures is starting to consider alternative scenarios for the host slot, even as Richard's begins taping new episodes this week. That just came out within the last hour or so. And I don't know. So it's there's basically, I feel like all the baggage with him is in two categories. There's the what I think now can be politely described as a farcical search, borrowing a word from Al Michaels, because the whole guest host process that they've gone through over the last 7-8 months, whatever it's been. By the way, if you are one of the other folks, you know, I know a lot of the guest hosts were just kind of stepping in to do it for a week and they had no real intention of trying to get the job permanently. But if you were one of those folks who was actually using this as an audition, how do you suppose you're feeling right now?
Yeah, and I'll be honest, I wish we knew which ones, because there's obviously a few of those people that did it.
Yeah, there were some that like okay, definitely said it, they were.
But I don't want the job. Like, yeah, I don't know which ones did. Like, I'm assuming that Mayim Bialik wanted it.
Yeah.
People seem like 100% sure that Aaron Rodgers wanted it, which kind of surprises me a little bit, but
he was very
like
vocal about it.
Yeah. It seems a little odd to me that he would, considering his current like career, like he's still, but I know he said he could fit it into his schedule and everything. And maybe he could, but it still seems odd.
What'd you think of his performance?
I thought he was a little too, I thought he did okay. And I watched him in the match the other day, that golf thing he did with Bryson and Phil and Brady. Mm-hmm. And I thought he was kind of the same there. He's just very like, whatever. Okay. Blah, blah, blah. And he's not like, he doesn't seem fun. He doesn't seem interested.
Right.
And like, I don't necessarily think he was terrible. I mean, he was bad. I just don't think he had quite the like outgoing personality to be the full-time guy.
Considering, you know, he was very outspoken about his love of the show.
I'm not told really quick. I'm not totally sure that his, I would love to host Jeopardy. Like, I'm not sure that those reports weren't maybe to lean on the Packers a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, yes, I can go do something else. Like,
right.
I have other interests. I don't need football.
Yeah.
Because it was around the same time that there were rumors he might want to get traded and stuff like that. So I don't know how seriously I take those reports either. But yeah, he does seem like a guy who's like a legit like Jeopardy junkie, loves the show.
Very much so. And you know, he talked at length about the amount of prep he put into mm-hmm. getting ready to host.
Making sure he did a good job, yeah.
And, you know, I felt like tactically he checked all the boxes and was competent, but...
Just an empty it factor.
Yeah, I was going to say, like you said, for a guy who's plays the glamour position quarterback for one of the NFL's most well-known teams and has done, you know, a lot of commercials... And, you know, has been in front of a camera and on a stage before. I was shocked by how little charisma how little he seemed to pop off the screen. Yeah. I was really taken aback by that. So and, you know, getting back to what I was saying before, all the criticism of Mike Richards has kind of fallen into two buckets, leading this ridiculous search process and ultimately getting the job himself, which, by the way, people who knew him and when they found out that he was going to Jeopardy a couple years ago, they predicted this was going to happen 2 years ago. Like, watch, when this job opens up, he's going to end up hiring himself. So it kind of speaks to what you were saying about this guy just always wanted to host a game show. And he had definitely tried to get the Price is Right job, because, you know, before he was with Jeopardy, he was the Price is Right executive producer. And it was his time at the Price is Right where he got into all the other hot water. He was involved in some, you know, offensive language, some sexual harassment type issues. I know one of the lawsuits, I think, involved one of the models, wrongful termination type deal. There was a lot. The thing with that, though, is I feel like none of that stuff is great, but I feel like there weren't a lot of examples that I've heard of that coming up recently. That feels like a lot of in the past 8-10, you know, plus years ago.
What do you mean?
The offensive stuff. You know, the search is its own problem, and that's very current, obviously, and you know, relevant to what's going on now. But the things about him being, you know, really off-putting as a person, I feel like the examples that were cited there. And the other thing that I thought was interesting, and the one issue I had with Claire McNair's story, I tweeted her about this today. I didn't get a response, and that's okay. She's probably getting inundated. You know, there are people there were a lot of people that came out of the woodwork in her story to, like, you know, share their horror stories and, you know, guaranteed anonymity to, you know, because of concerns over their job security, yada, yada. There were a few people from The Price is Right. Drew Carey was one of them. The longest tenured model on the show is another. And then the current executive producer, who Evelyn Warfel is her name. You know, she worked under Mike Richards for a long time. She's been with The Price is Right for over 10 years. They all, when the news first broke that it sounded like he was getting the job, all put out statements in support of him. And it really felt like it painted a very different picture of him. Drew Carey, I'll read his tweets. He said, "I need to speak up for Mike Richards and his time at The Price is Right. Every Price is Right model since I started has gotten pregnant, and he built whole season arcs celebrating them. We haven't even had a baby shower show, for crying out loud. The models were not even allowed to talk to me before Mike came on the show. He took them from being just bodies on the stage to actual people that audiences could get to know as part of the Price is Right family. He's great, and I hope he gets to be the next Jeopardy host too." You know, and the thing about the models, you know, why that's also significant is once they got actual speaking roles on that show, they got paid more money. Because, you know, you're taking on a higher level of performance. Mm-hmm. So that was significant. And, you know, what he didn't, Drew Carey didn't mention there, but, you know, along that same time when Mike Richards was with The Price is Right, you know, they added male models, which is something they'd never done under any of their previous management. So I'm not saying, and this is not I want to be 100% clear. This is not a defense of Mike Richards. Clearly the guy's got some issues. in the past and for different reasons currently. And I'm not saying any of what he did here excuse that, but I felt like it was at least worth a mention. And omitting that, the fact that there were people that were willing to like put their name on the record, knowing that this guy was facing a shitstorm, to like speak up in defense of him, I felt like that at least deserved a mention.
Yeah. There was one of them that I saw in the article today who was one of the two girls that was, or women, I don't know, whatever. one of the two women that was on his podcast, they like reached out to her and she like didn't respond. And they're like, oh yeah, and by the way, she's now an assistant like producer on Jeopardy. It's like, well, yeah, she's not going to fucking say anything. Like those aren't the people that you need like much of a comment from. And you're right. There's two different things that are like issues now. It's the hiring process, and is he like a shitbag? Like, is he sexist? He said he made like a Jewish joke. He was, you know, there's accusations of sexual harassment. Who knows what actually happened? We're going to assume that, you know, there's some truth to them. How much? Who knows? But like, those are two different things, right? And so, do they carry the same weight? Is one, I would say no, but collectively, it seems like it's casting, it would cast a bit of a pall over the whole thing. And the thing that you sent me a little bit ago, seems to be that's exactly what happened. Like, it sounds like they started taping today, for those that are unaware, they started taping for the new season today, and it sounds like it was awkward as hell.
Yeah.
So that's, I don't know if that's something they move past quickly and people stop caring about or what, but
at the end of the day, this feels like this was an eminently avoidable problem.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that's probably the most frustrating thing about all of it. Like, there was nothing compelling about Mike Richards or Mike Richards as a game show host that necessitated saying,
right,
man, we have got to find a way to make it work with this guy. You know, like,
right, he's not like, I don't want to draw like too much of a comparison, but he's not like, you know, like a stud athlete. I'll use Kareem Hunt because he had some shit around him, and I don't want to compare like violence to against women towards hiring yourself for a job. But Kareem Hunt, supremely talented, former rushing thing. There's a lot of reward to that, right? So it's a risk, but there's a lot of reward. I don't know what the reward is for Mike Richards. There's 10 other people that are willing to do the job that would be just as good at it. So I don't really get the point. I don't get why this, and you're right. You're exactly right. It's completely avoidable because, like, it seems like, and I hate to keep calling her Blossom, but I don't want to mispronounce her name the whole time.
Mayim Bialik.
Okay.
I got it out right once. Now I'm confident. I can do this.
There you go. It seems like she really wanted the job, and I'll admit she was one of my least favorite guest hosts. She just had like, and maybe it was nerves or something, but she had a couple little like, I don't know, a couple little things she did that just kind of rubbed at me the wrong way and got really annoying, and she kept doing them the whole time. So I didn't really want her to get the job, but seems like she really wanted it. She's also incredibly smart, and my hunch is she probably would have gotten comfortable and been good at it. So whatever.
So there's
a couple other people, and yeah, you're right. Why this guy? What did he do to set himself apart? I don't think he did anything.
In front of the camera, no. Yeah, clearly, he was playing the game the right way. on the other side of the camera,
yeah, all these guest hosts showed up and thought, oh, this is Alex Trebek's show. This is all going to be on the up and up. But it was actually Mike Richards' show all along.
Well, at least in the last year and a half.
Because
he has not been there very long. So that actually leads me to the one other thing I wanted to ask you. So I was super invested in this from when Ken Jennings, I saw pretty much all of his episodes. I watched all the Mike Richards episodes. Really, through the first, I would say, 4 or 5 months of this search process, I saw almost everything. I did not watch any of Dr. Oz because I think that was like the same week March Madness was starting, and I kind of tuned out on Jeopardy that week.
That worked out pretty well for you.
Yeah, but I will admit, like the last couple months, I really didn't see much. Like I think I saw one of my MBA Alex episodes. Pretty much everybody else this summer, I kind of after the Tournament of Champions in May, I'd mostly checked out. I think David Faber had one that I saw. I thought he did a pretty good job.
I honestly, there were none. There were very few, I should say. There weren't none, but I didn't watch Dr. Oz. I didn't like Dr. Oz. I'll be honest, I didn't really love LeVar Burton either.
Yeah, so that's what I want to ask you. Who did you like and who did you not like? Because
LeVar Burton liked Ken.
Okay.
I really liked Ken because he came out like the way he was so, and everyone was pretty good, but the fact that he was first. He was the one that had to take a stab at it first, right? So I felt like the bar was incredibly high, and I thought, like, for a guy who was doing something that no one else has done in who knows, what, 30-some, 35 years, something crazy.
Right.
No one else has hosted that but Alex Trebek, and he was the first one to do it. And I thought he did really well, and I thought he got better and better as he went along, and I thought he was a really great natural fit. I didn't care for Mike Richards. He was fine. I was like, okay. And part of the way that I was judging him was because he said, oh yeah, I kind of just got forced into this.
you really got hooked.
They really needed someone. And so I was here. I saved the day. And so I didn't really hold him to that much of a standard. I'm like, okay, if you can get through the show, that's fine. And the one thing I used to judge people was, did you get through all the questions? Because nothing drives me crazier than having like two or three clues left on the board at the end of a round. So it was immediate. Like if you were fast enough to get through all the questions, I'd give you benefit of the doubt.
That's an interesting criterion, because isn't that largely dependent on, you know, if you've got a bunch of questions that people don't answer and they have to, you know, wait 4 or 5 seconds before you get the boop, 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 you know, and you know, you're kind of sitting around waiting for the next one. Or if you've got like, you know, when they have like the
it's clue always the crew. Ones where they have like video ones where like
some of those kind of chew up more time.
There were definitely times over the last few years where Alex was reading a little bit slower. And just because he was reading a little bit slower, they weren't getting through clues.
Interesting.
It's one or two clues, like it's not that big of a deal. But the worst thing was I always wanted to get the sports categories. And if you're anyone who ever watches Jeopardy, you know that the people on Jeopardy go to those last. So it's always like the ones that I wanted to see are the ones that weren't getting read, if that was the case.
Boy, do I feel that. Yeah.
You know what I mean? You know, like there was that one from a few years ago, that football category, where they went 5 categories deep. They were all pretty easy questions and that no one got a single one. No one even rang in to guess. And Alex just made fun of them all, basically.
Yeah.
I didn't really care for Aaron Rodgers. I thought Anderson Cooper was fine. I didn't care for I thought Buzzy Cohen did a good job. He was better than I expected. I liked him more as a host than I did as a contestant, honestly. The one that I really liked and nobody else really seemed to was Savannah Guthrie.
I didn't see any of hers.
She was the only one who wasn't – I felt like everyone else who did it had watched and studied Alex and tried to, like, emulate him and sort of speak with the same type of cadence and handle themselves at the podium the same way and interact with the everyone else the same way. I thought she was far and away the most relaxed and the most, like, herself. She was different than everybody else, and I kind of liked it. I thought it was a little refreshing, like, change of pace – because I don't want the next person to just try and be Alex.
Yeah.
Alex was Alex. Do your own thing a little bit.
Yeah, go back to Drew Carey. I mean, when he took over for Bob Barker, that was like the big thing. Was like, you're not going to reinvent The Price is Right. But at the same time,
whoever takes that job is not going to be the next Alex Trebek.
You can't do a Bob Barker impression. You can't do an Alex Trebek impression and think you're going to have much of a shelf life. You got to find ways within the context of the institution to make it your own and find your own voice.
Be true to it, but also be true to yourself and, you know, do it the way that you think works best. And I thought she stood out the most to me in that way. The thing I didn't really love about LeVar, I love LeVar Burton, and I loved Reading Rainbow as a kid. I felt like at times he still thought he was on Reading Rainbow. I thought he was like reacting like they were kids. Mm. He was like overly excited when people would get like questions right, and it felt a little forced, for lack of a better term. But yeah, to me it just didn't seem to fit. So, and people loved him, but it just didn't do it for me.
Yeah, I was going to say, so for those who don't know, he was probably the most public in his campaigning for the job, and it took a long time to get him a shot. And for quite a while, as they were announcing other guest hosts that were scheduled, the longer the Jeopardy went without giving LeVar Burton a shot, the more the, you know, sizable fan base of the show was like, what is going on here? Like, give this guy a chance. He clearly, you know, given his background, you know, he and his passion for the show, he deserves an opportunity here. And they finally did. I didn't see any of those episodes again, so I can't weigh in personally, but I can say that after his episodes aired, the general sentiment that I saw was the only people that were still campaigning for him to get the job and thought that it should be his were people who didn't actually watch him host for that week, because it was brutal. And there were rumors, there was a conspiracy theory floating around that people within Jeopardy that didn't want him to have the job left a bunch of flubs in and things like that that would normally get edited out. And then it came out afterwards that he just had so many of them and he struggled so much that they just kind of reached a point where like they ran out of time and had to just leave some of those awkward moments in. That's not a good sign. I guess the taping days with him went way longer than anybody else. So, you know,
he only did one day.
Yeah. Yeah.
He filmed all his episodes in one day.
Well, there you go. And that's tough. I mean, to be fair, that is hard. You've been preparing for this your whole life, and you know, you finally get your shot and you had a very public campaign behind you. I'm sure he was pressing, and who knows, had he gotten more time, maybe he'd have gotten more comfortable and things could have worked out better for him. But, you know, pretty much all those hosts other than Ken Jennings did 1 or 2 weeks. So, you know, it is what it is. So I will tell you, so like I like Ken Jennings a lot, and I think from, you know, going back to that Ringer story again, it sounded to me, I know Alex Trebek always used to joke that, you know, he wanted a young up and comer as his successor. So he thought Betty White was the best person for the job, but it did seem like there were definite signs that he had kind of given the nod to Jennings.
Yeah.
There's that, you know, that there was that anecdote about when Ken Jennings showed up for the first day of taping in Trebek's dressing room, his widow had left Alex Trebek's cufflinks with a note for him, wishing him good luck, which was kind of like a sign of like, hey, you're the one.
Yeah.
I thought he did a great job, and especially given the circumstances of being first, like you had said, I thought Mike Richards was fine. I'm going to tell you the one that I was actually really surprised by, and I'm curious to get your thoughts, Joe Buck.
Not bad.
Yeah.
I didn't mind him. I thought he was pretty decent, actually.
Okay. Because I, like I said, I took most of the summer off, but, you know, there's this contestant that's on there right now, Matt Amodio.
He's a powerhouse. He's annoying.
They introduce him as being from, I think, New Haven, Connecticut, but he went to high school in Medina. So he's a Northeast Ohio native.
He went to Ohio State.
There you go. And his Indians fandom has come up on the show. I think like the first day that Joe Buck hosted, they were talking about both being at Game 7 of the World Series a few years ago. So he's gone on a real heater. What is he, like 17, 18 days in a row now?
I don't know what it's at, but yeah, he's
now number three, third all time in winnings already behind.
He's way behind Holzhauer, but
yeah.
And Holzhauer is just a little bit behind Jennings, but
right. So those guys are both around $2.5 million, and I think Amodio's a little over 600,000. So
yeah, but he's still. I mean, yeah, he's killing it. He's got like a little mannerism about starting every question exactly this, every response exactly the same way, which drives me crazy.
What?
Yeah. So if you haven't
every
watched,
answer, what?
If you haven't watched, you know that Jeopardy, like, you have to respond in the form of a question. And he responds in the form of a question, but every question starts with what's, even if it doesn't make sense. So if it's, if the response is William Shakespeare, he says, what's Shakespeare? And he never says a first name unless they prompt him for it. I think he has, like, built in these sort of, like, mental strategies that require him not to think about it. Right. So he, before he, like, even starts, he doesn't think about what he says before he answers. So he just says, what's whatever. And if it's Shakespeare, he's not going to say William, even though everyone knows it's William. He's not going to leave the, like, option that he flubs it and says it wrong or anything like that. So he's really smart in that way. Like, yeah, he knows all the answers. He's brilliant. Like, just a really smart dude. It's, but, like, he also, like, he has a very effective strategy. It's just annoying.
Well, it's the whole what's thing and not saying any first names unless absolutely necessary. It's, you know, taking potential risks or whatever out of the equation and fewer decisions, I guess you could say. It reminds me a little bit of, like, Steve Jobs always used to wear the black turtleneck and jeans because that was one less thing he had to decide every day. Yeah. What am I going to wear? Nope, that's already taken care of. That is out of the equation for the day. So
yeah, it's smart and it makes a lot of sense. It just drives me crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I've come around on it, I guess.
I think I have too a little bit. I think I'm just used to it. It's like, yeah, I'm at least going to appreciate, because I'll be honest, I didn't really like Holzhauer a lot at first either. He seemed kind of annoying. He was a little grating at first, and I've come around on him a little bit too. So
yeah,
I think it gets to a point where if you're just really damn good at the game, I have to appreciate it and just enjoy it for what it is.
Yeah. So anyway, this guy's run kind of got me back into it. And especially because I knew Joe Buck was going to be guest hosting for a week. I run kind of hot and cold on him as a sports announcer. I like him in certain settings better than others, but, you know, basically grown up with him calling so many iconic, you know, major games for, you know, most of my life now. I mean, he started when he was super young. He got that lead job at Fox. So, like, seeing him in the setting of being a game show host for a week, I'm like, all right, this is interesting. I got to give this a shot. I thought he was awesome. I loved him as a Jeopardy host.
Yeah,
I don't know if I don't know if he had any sort of, I'm doubting that he had any sort of interest in doing it full time. And I'm guessing
he's one of the few people who probably makes more.
Yeah,
with this current gig.
Yeah, and he's busy enough with the NFL and Major League Baseball. I know he doesn't do the U.S. Open anymore, but you know, he's got enough other things going on that I'm guessing that, yeah, he probably had no interest in doing that permanently, which is too bad, because remember what I had said earlier about Aaron Rodgers kind of lacking that charisma? Joe Buck had it in spades. He was totally into it when people were, like, you know, getting these really obscure answers or pulling off daily doubles, you know, wagering big money and stuff like that. And I'm like, yeah, that's the energy I want when I'm watching the show for 30 minutes a night. So
that was honestly one of the things that I thought Savannah Guthrie had more than most.
Okay.
She was interested. She was rooting. You could like, she wasn't like patronizing about it. She wasn't like celebrating, but you could tell that like she wanted everyone to do well. She liked when people got the questions right. She liked talking to them and like bullshitting in that segment in the middle of the first round. Like, she liked all of that and she was engaged, and but she wasn't just standing up there being like rigid, trying to be really like static about it. And I thought Joe Buck was kind of the same way. Mm-hmm. I think they were probably Robin Roberts a little bit too, was similar that way. But I think most of them were just trying to like, it felt like they were just trying to get through it. It didn't seem like a lot of them were having fun.
Yeah. All right. So just to put a bow on this, if you had to venture a guess, Mike Richards keeping this job, or is Sony actually going to pull the plug?
I think we're like a couple days away from knowing. I think if it snowballs, I think it could be something they pull the plug very quickly within like the next couple days. If they don't pull it within the next couple days, I think they just weather the storm and he keeps it.
I think that's a good prediction. Yeah, it's going to have to happen quick.
I think by the time we host again, we will know. Yeah. By the time we do one of these again, we will know for sure whether he's still in the job or not.
This has all been fascinating to me.
It is. It's a wild thing to be like this interested in.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the whole thing, because of the nature of the show, Jeopardy is like comfort food television. It's always there. It's always, you know exactly what you're getting out of it, and it's reliable, and it's just always kind of churning along in the background. And this process really put this whole show in a much higher profile spot than it has been probably ever.
And it raises the question to me. I don't know if this will be good for it, though. For most shows, something like this would be great. It'll raise the profile. People will tune in just to see it. I don't know if Jeopardy works that way. I think a lot of people who see this stuff, it will turn them off. And they were, as much as they were watching Jeopardy for Jeopardy, they were watching Jeopardy for Alex Trebek too. So if they don't like the guy who's in his spot now, they may be inclined not to watch anymore.
Yeah. I think had this search ended with somebody that was a little more likable and had a little less baggage, I think this whole search would have been just what the show needed, because raised the profile and gotten a whole lot more eyeballs on it.
Agree completely. And I think it would have done that. I think the fact that it's this guy who's not particularly likable and isn't doing a whole lot to make people want to watch.
Yeah.
Like if it was Maya Bialik, like as much as I didn't really love her as a host, you could tell she loved it and she wanted the job and she would work really hard at being good at it. And she would, do a very good job of it. It wasn't about her. It feels a lot like to Mike Richards. It's about him.
Mm.
I think all those other people who really wanted to do it love the show and they want to make the show good.
Yeah.
They don't just want to be the host of Jeopardy. They want Jeopardy to be really good, and they think that they can make it good. I think Mike Richards, it goes back to the thing I said at the beginning of this. He just wants to host a game show.
If he does stay on, if he doesn't stay on as the host, I cannot imagine he stays on as the executive producer either.
Way too awkward.
I will say that if he does survive all this, I know the Jeopardy audience, the Jeopardy community, I think is an extremely diehard, loyal group. I get the sense that it's a little bit provincial. And if you're not one of us, you're not one of us, type of thing. And there is a lot of consternation I've seen about him. I know there's talk that him mandating wardrobe choices for contestants and, how is he going to change this show? And it's interesting to me because, is you're a Jeopardy diehard. I'm kind of a Price is Right diehard in much the same way. I can remember when he took over as the executive producer for the Price is Right, there were a lot of similar concerns then, and clearly he ran into some issues. But what you actually saw on TV every day, it did change. They put a fresh coat of paint on the show. They started doing some different things, some more themed episodes. And, there was the stuff with making the models more active, with speaking parts and whatnot. But the core gameplay there never changed. And, here's one. So, apparently one of the things with him is he's really obsessed with appearance and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I can distinctly remember when he, about 10, 12 years ago, there was a rumor on one of the message boards that apparently on his watch, they were going to start making sure that the best looking contestants were strategically placed in the first few rows picked behind contestants row so that they were the ones that were on screen most. I can tell you from watching a whole lot of episodes, hundreds of episodes over the years, that really did not happen. So, my
all you ugly sitting in the first few rows, Tino saw you.
Yeah. I'm just going to say, as somebody who has seen his work over the years, if he does hang on to this job and this becomes a new normal, you might see some cosmetic changes. I don't think the gameplay on the daily, edition that he is hosting, I really don't think that's going to change. Ultimately, I think it's going to be the same game. And, you might not like him. You've got very valid reasons for not liking him. but I don't think the institution of Jeopardy is going to crumble because of Mike Richards.
I'll tell you how the way that I see it working out for me as someone who, as you mentioned, I just love the show. I watch it any chance I can get. So for a long time, I had DVR, and I used to DVR Jeopardy, and my wife and I would watch it when we eat dinner, regardless of what time we ate dinner.
Mm-hmm.
We would, you know, we'd watch the episode from the day before, or we'd watch, we'd start the one from that day so we could fast forward through commercials or whatever. We don't have DVR right now. I don't have any sort of cable package at the moment. I have a few apps. I'm one of these cord cutters. But I do have Paramount, so I am able to watch Jeopardy. I'm able to watch it at 7:30. My wife and I make a conscious decision, or we usually do. If we're making dinner, like, let's hurry up and get dinner so we can catch Jeopardy, right? So we're not like sitting down at 7:50 to watch it. We want to be able to watch it. So we make sure that as we're doing things, we're ideally ready to watch Jeopardy at 7:30. I don't see myself making that effort for him.
Hmm.
I feel like if we're sitting down and it happens to be 7:30 or 7:40, I'll throw on Jeopardy. If it's 7:55, whatever. I miss Jeopardy. No big deal. I don't see it being like appointment viewing for me anymore.
I don't think you'll be alone in that. We'll see what happens though.
And it's possible that would have been the case anyways, but I honestly don't think it would have. I think I would have given any of the hosts, all things considered, like, I would have given any of the hosts like benefit of the doubt and been like, okay, let's see how they can do it. It's unfair for me to expect this person to be Alex Trebek. I just want to see what they can do. And as long as I think they're working hard and they're not terrible, and none of mm-hmm. the guest hosts were terrible, as long as they're decent at it, great. I'll still enjoy the show. This just feels a little like,
icky.
Yeah, exactly. I said that earlier, and that's the best word I can come up for it. It just sure. doesn't feel like it's on the up and up. And so it's like, I don't need it. I don't need it anymore. And
well,
that sucks, because I love Jeopardy.
I hear you.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
So, in the Department of Feel-Good Programming, I do have to ask, did you catch any of the Field of Dreams baseball game, Major League Baseball game that aired last week? This is our Joe Buck segue, because on the same week that he was hosting Jeopardy on one channel, on another channel at the same time, he was calling the White Sox and Yankees in Dyersville, Iowa at the Field of Dreams.
I did not watch any of it as it was going on. I saw like some of the previews, and I saw like some of the pregame stuff. And I had seen over the last few weeks them like leading up to it, and Twitter loved it. Like, it seems like it's one of very few like promotional vehicles that sports have tried in the last few years that were universally like, no one had anything bad to say about it.
Yeah.
Which is kind of cool. Like, that's great. The movie Field of Dreams is fucking terrible. I don't care what anybody says. It's a garbage film, and nothing you can say will change my mind. But as far as like a promotional, like one-time thing, I think it's pretty cool. And the game obviously delivered too.
That was, yeah. So
it seems like all you could ask for.
I was traveling for work. I got back to my hotel room, and I was able to finally turn it on for the ninth inning when like the fireworks really started to go off there with all the home runs. You know, the White Sox blew a lead in the top of the inning, and then they walked it off with a home run in the bottom of the ninth. You could not have asked for a better game given the setting there. It was a perfect confluence of, a unique atmosphere and just a spectacular game to go with it. I think they ended up saying it was the highest rated, you know, in TV ratings, it was like the highest rated game in 15 years or something for the regular season. which is phenomenal, especially when you consider what most everything other than the NFL, what most sports TV ratings have looked like over the past year. Drawing something that big, I mean, clearly there was a lot of interest in it. It just looked so cool. And, you know, I got YouTube TV. I'm doing this trial for like their 4K package. So even when I watched the end of the game live in my hotel room, when I came back, I, you know, put it on DVR just to watch an inning of it, just to see the 4K, because it was just such a picturesque setting. They totally nailed the setup and, mm-hmm. you know, the flyover shots that they were doing, and it, you know, they put a lot, I mean, they had, you know, special on-screen graphics that looked like kind of old timey. All the bells and whistles. And I was listening to a Joe Buck interview. He was talking that, with, I think, Sports Illustrated, he said, like, the production level that they had, like, all the trucks they brought in, it was, like, more than a Super Bowl, which is nuts for me for, like, a regular season baseball game. So, anyway, it was one of those things. I mean, you kind of are in the dog days of the baseball season and, you know, something to kind of break it up. I thought it was a really cool thing. It's apparently not going to be a one-off. They're going to do one of these again next year with the Cubs and the Reds. So, I don't know. I'm guessing it's probably going to become an annual thing. Probably won't always have the... you know, the mystique of the first one. But, you know, baseball also does the one in Williamsport. The Indians are going to be playing their game on Sunday night against the Angels at, there's a stadium, about 5 miles away from where the Little League World Series is going on. They've started doing that the last few years, where they have like a ESPN Sunday Night Baseball Major League game during the Little League World Series. So the Indians get to play in that this year. So, that'll be, not quite what the Field of Dreams was, but, you know, is a novelty type game to break up your season. It's pretty cool.
Did you see the, it captured my feelings on Field of Dreams perfectly. Did you see there was a podcast, CeCe Sabathia does a podcast with Ryan Rucco.
Okay.
So a couple months ago before the season, they had Tim Anderson on, who ended up hitting the walk-off homer.
Yes.
They and Ryan Rucco asks him, he says, you know, you're going to play in this game. Like, what do you think of it? And Tim Anderson says, I don't know much about it. I haven't seen the movie. And CeCe Sabathia just screams like he's, you can tell he's very excited. He says, and this is a quote, "That's what I keep telling this motherfucker. Black people don't give a fuck about Field of Dreams playing in no fucking corn," which is a fantastic line. Playing in no fucking corn. But the idea that the guy who had the like walk-off thing has no interest in the movie whatsoever, has never seen it, it means absolutely nothing to him, raises the question about how much do baseball players alone actually like Field of Dreams? Because if I was a baseball player and this was like some great baseball movie, I would love it.
So, fair question.
You like Field of Dreams, right?
Okay. I, like Tim Anderson, have never seen Field of Dreams.
Oh, wait, what?
Yeah.
Okay, well, you're not missing much.
Well, yeah, I know. Now we're going to find out how many of our friends actually listen to our podcast based on how many text messages I get when this goes up tomorrow.
Yeah.
That's yeah, no, I so... I can't necessarily relate to some of the other aspects of that quote. But yeah, I have not seen the movie either. I do have an appreciation for sporting events being conducted in really unusual settings.
Yeah.
So, you know, every anything NFL game that's in London,
make the Major League Baseball regular season is a great idea.
Yes. Any NFL game that's over in London being played at 9:30 our time, I'm on board.
Yeah.
You know, college basketball has done some regular season games on like
carriers and stuff.
Aircraft carriers. Fun. Yeah. Hell yeah. Sign me up. I'm totally down. So yeah, from that aspect,
you just like the aspect that it's a different, it's kind of a unique, fun, like one-off setting, like the outdoor hockey games.
Great. Yes. Yeah.
Like,
perfect.
That's cool.
Oh my God.
The Field of Dreams angle means nothing to you.
Yeah. Yeah. No, okay. I will say that like watching the home run balls just disappearing into corn was pretty cool. Pretty fun. But yeah, no, I'm glad you mentioned the hockey. 'Cause yeah, they do the Winter Classic on New Year's Day. I always, at some point when there's like a lull in the college football games, I always try to watch some of the Winter Classic. But they did the one, it was not on, they have a whole series of those games now, the NHL does. And they did one, I think, in Lake Tahoe.
It was, yeah, that sounds right.
It was incredible.
Like, they've all been really well done.
Oh yeah. So this one, it like looked like it was by a ski lodge or something. And it was right, right by the water. And I don't know, it just the whole, yeah, this cabin. And yeah, it was a fantastic setup there. So that was like on a random Saturday afternoon, I feel like in February or something. That was cool. So yeah, from that aspect, I was like, all right, gimmick game, I'm in, let's do it.
So, yeah for sure. And so I mean it feels like something they could probably do more of. Like I can't think of any other ones off the top of my head, because like my head goes to Major League, but okay, they just played those games in a regular stadium. Like most movies are just, you know, in a, if they're about baseball, they're probably just in like a baseball stadium.
Right.
So that one is unique in that respect, but yeah, it was cool. I like that way more than I like the movie Field of Dreams. That's all that it comes down to for me.
All right. So one last thing I wanted to bring up, and it's interesting you mentioned, we got into this whole sidebar on settings and you know, environments for games and stuff like that. I wanted to bring up wrestling. I know you're not a big wrestling guy anymore, but for those who are, this weekend coming up is huge across the whole industry. WWE has got their SummerSlam pay-per-view, and it's going to be at the Las Vegas Raiders stadium, Allegiant Stadium, I think it's called there. So they're going to have like 45,000 people in there. And they're basically making this like their summer WrestleMania. Like they're going all out. And a couple nights or one night before that, because WWE is actually doing a pay-per-view on a Saturday, which is unique in and of itself. But Friday night, AEW, which is the other wrestling company that's kind of come on the scene here in the last couple years, they've got the show on Wednesday nights, and now they've just started one on Fridays. They're on TNT. They're doing a show at the Bulls, arena, the United Center in Chicago. And I think the last I saw, they're looking at having over 14,000 people there, which is crazy. I think it's the like highest attendance for a wrestling show that's not WWE in the United States in like over 20 years. This whole company's arc has just been fascinating to me over the last 2 years since they launched, and the momentum that they've built. They're drawing like 1 million viewers a week now, which is really good. I think in like the key TV demographic, like the 18 to 49, they actually outdraw Monday Night Raw, which has been on for 30 years. So to be doing
that
already.
What they do with that, with the pizza cutter thing? How'd that track?
So they brought in this guy who is kind of an independent wrestler.
This guy.
His name is Nick Gage. He's not a full-time performer. He has not been back on since, but they brought him in for one match a few weeks ago, and he's kind of got a reputation for being a garbage wrestler, relying on weapons and junk. So he, at one point in this match against Chris Jericho, pulled a pizza cutter out of his pocket on his pants and, you know, gigged him on the forehead. And of course, the announcers are freaking out. Oh, this is horrible. You know, we got to go to commercial. Yeah. And so they go to commercial. They go picture in picture where they keep the match on one side of the screen. They go to commercial. And the first thing you see after this guy carves up some dude's forehead with a pizza cutter was a commercial for Domino's and a pizza cutter going through a pizza. Yeah. The timing was absolutely unbelievable. And
that makes me want a hot and ready.
Oh, it was, yeah. So, yeah, Domino's was apparently not thrilled with that, but what are you going to do? But, yeah, that promotion has been really, really fun, and it's been a great alternative, I think, if, you know, you're kind of burned out on the WWE product. And, you know, WWE, for, you know, all its, you know, pluses and minuses, it's a very distinct vision of what wrestling should look like. And it's a very stylized and polished product. And the AEW has been a refreshing alternative, a breath of fresh air. And, you know, the hot rumor is that on Friday night, so, you know, tomorrow night as we record this here, when they do this new Friday show in Chicago, I guess apparently they're bringing in CM Punk, who was, you know, a cult hero in WWE, went away about 7 years ago and has pretty much stayed completely out of wrestling since then. Tried a couple of UFC matches. That did not go well for him. But landing him, I mean, he was the WWE champ for, I think he had the longest run of any champion in like the last 25 years. So to get him, that's a major coup for them.
Is he wrestling?
Yeah, that's that, you know, and it's been really kind of fun to see some of the hints that AEW has been dropping about it. There's one wrestler that like every week he does a promo, he keeps referencing Best in the World, which is what CM Punk always referred to himself as. Meanwhile, like the current world champ on AEW, every week he comes into the ring, when he's doing an interview or something, he wears a t-shirt with some phrase on it that's got CM. Like one week he had a shirt with Cookie Monster. Another week he had a shirt that said Chick Magnet. So CM. Okay. Yeah. So it was like kind of a subtle thing. Then there were other ones where they were not really subtle, where like they showed some fan in the crowd that had a sign that said CM Punk is not here. So I guess they were not quite as casual about that one, but yeah.
It's one of those things that always like, it always used to drive me crazy because I get why they do it. They publish all, they want you to be tuned in. They want you watching when CM Punk returns.
Yeah.
But it was awesome when you'd be watching and like anyone big, like The Rock, Stone Cold, whoever, one of them came back if they hadn't been around for a while.
Yep.
Would come back and you weren't expecting it.
They've done some of that as well.
When you know it's happening, like that's nowhere near as cool.
Yeah,
like, I get why they have to do it too. They want you watching. Like,
well, like last winter they brought Sting back on AEW, and I mean he was a big guy in like the late 90s, the old WCW, and there was no sort of hype or hint that he was coming before he showed up. I think TNT actually was like kind of pissed at them for not hyping it because they felt like that was a wasted opportunity.
Sure.
But it's been really fun. And just wrestling in general. Now, Monday Night Raw, I think, has been borderline unwatchable. But the AEW show...
They've also been cutting guys like crazy.
Yeah.
I feel like you said, I don't watch a lot anymore.
Yeah.
But I know like some of the guys who are pretty big.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I know the guys who were... You know, they were getting main events.
Yeah.
Well, it feels like that Braun Strowman guy.
He was recently in a pay-per-view main event, and within a month, he was out of the company.
That's crazy. And then the one dude, who's the guy, like the real creepy guy that used to walk
Bray
down
Wyatt.
With a lantern? That guy. They got rid of him, too.
Yeah.
I thought he was a guy that I felt like was huge.
Right. Oh, he was. Yeah. I mean, they gave him the top title for a couple times. Sure. Yeah. So, yeah, you know, wrestling in general during the pandemic got hit hard, and you know, when I had the WWE guy Otis on here a few weeks ago, I asked him, you know, because they had that what do they call it, the Thunderdome, where they had the video screens and the fans, you know, all remote, and it was better than being in an empty building, but the atmosphere for those shows sucked.
Yeah,
and you know, the last 5 or 6 weeks now, both the companies are back to touring. You know, WWE was in Cleveland back in July. I was there for that. That's the best wrestling crowd, WWE crowd anyway, that I've been a part of since I was back in high school during like the heyday. You know, I don't know if it was just people were really excited to be there and finally like at an event. But just the energy in there was tremendous. And their Friday night show, SmackDown, they're really doing good stuff. So Roman Reigns is like the big champ right now. He's the top guy in the company. I don't know how they've managed to make a leukemia survivor into like the biggest asshole on television, but somehow he is, and it's amazing. He is killing it as this like uber bad guy champion, and now they got John Cena back for like a limited run, and that's the main event of the SummerSlam pay-per-view this weekend. And seeing those guys in person, it was fantastic. Wrestling is I don't know if it's just that like having another company pushing them has kind of forced them to step up their game on Fridays, because that's kind of like their flagship show, or what, but or maybe if it's just the fact that they've got, you know, full crowds again or whatever. But yeah, the product on at least Wednesdays and Fridays across both companies has been way better than it's been in a long, long time.
Is it going to be like Monday Night Wars all over again?
Yeah, well, so that's the funny thing. So WWE's got this other show, NXT. It used to be only on their network, and it was kind of like the developmental program. It was like their minor league. So yeah, guys would, you know, come in, work there for a couple years, figure out who they and what they want to be, and then they get called up to one of the top shows. Well, when AEW launched, WWE struck a deal to put NXT on Wednesday nights to go head to head with them, and AEW kind of boat raced them to the point that USA waved the white flag, moved NXT to Tuesdays, and you know, backed off because they were getting beat so bad every week. And you know, now there's, you know, if you're really into this stuff, there's all these stories out there now that I guess Vince McMahon, who had been pretty hands off with that and focused mainly on their flagship stuff, is taking a much more hands on approach and radically reshaping what that program has been. So yeah, I mean, you know, WWE will talk about how their competition is, you know, Disney and you know, the, you know, Marvel Universe and things like that. And, you know, they're way above just being a wrestling company or whatever. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think they've certainly, you know, AEW's on their radar. I mean, a lot of the guys that made their name in WWE have gone over there and are doing, you know, really cool stuff for them and have helped them, you know, build a really big audience. So yeah. And
Urban Meyer's showing up every once in a while.
Yeah, he made a cameo on their pay-per-view. Yeah, because they, you know, AEW, they're owned by the family that owns the Jaguars. So while the pandemic was going on, they did all their shows at the amphitheater that's next to the Jaguar Stadium. So yeah, now that Urban's coaching the Jags, they got him on a pay-per-view helping Chris Jericho, throwing him footballs and a laptop to beat somebody over the head with. That was fun.
Oh, God. That's pure Jacksonville.
Oh, it was great. So yeah, that was pretty funny. The rest of that wasn't so good, but yeah, that segment at least, his reaction and his acting, it's probably for the best. He's a football coach, but it was good.
Oh, nice. So,
well, there you go. What else? We're over an hour here. You want to? Should we call it a night?
You wanted to talk Kirtland
football? Oh no, we'll
save that one.
Yeah, we can say. I will just very quickly. I know the high school football season starting this weekend, and shortly before you and I started recording, somebody shared on Twitter that the Kirtland football program put out a hype video for their season that was just wildly over the top, and I just thought it was amazing. But you know what? When you win that many state championships and you've put together a dynasty like them, you can flex like that. So God bless them. Good for Kirtland.
It's funny. I have my niece. I think she's a senior. She's going to be a senior at Kirtland. Every time I see her, like, her boyfriend plays football and like all this stuff. And I like subtly give her shit about it all the time. Like, she mentioned how they had to buy like championship rings or something, and I was like, they give championship rings for D5 titles? Every time I just get these like subtle little digs in there. I don't think she knows that I'm just giving her shit. But yeah, sorry, it's D5 football, Kirtland. There's no such thing as a dynasty in D5.
Come on now, small town America. It's public school.
There, I said it.
Oh, the heel.
Yeah, I stand by it.
Yeah.
Maybe if the Mormons hadn't set up shop there.
Well, If we don't make it to episode 300, it's going to be because an angry mob marched up 306 and decided to tune you up for your...
What, all 17 of them?
Come on. Come on.
Yeah.
Sir.
Yeah, I said it.
All right. We better call this off before you get us into more trouble here.
Man, no one from Kirtland is tuning in.
Oh,
yeah, there might be someone. I don't know. I don't even know if I know anybody in Kirtland.
We'll find out now, won't we?
Yeah, I guess we will, won't we?
All right. Well, here's to 200 and hopefully 200 more. As a reminder, you could subscribe to The Nail in the Coffin on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and most other podcast listening platforms. We are also on waitingfornextyear.com. That is going to do it for us for this week. For Travis Yulee, I'm Tom Valentino. We will catch you next time on The Nail in the Coffin, part of the Evergreen Podcast Network.
Have you ever wanted to know how to win a Formula One Grand Prix? I mean, really know. Know about the driver tactics from the cockpit, the strategy calls from the pit wall, and even the mind games in the paddock. There's a lot more that goes into winning a Grand Prix than just 90 minutes of racing. So every week on the F1 Strategy Report, we're taking a deep dive into the decisions that shape every result. Hey there, my name is Michael Laminato, and every week I'm joined by an expert guest from the paddock to talk through the big calls that won the race and the missteps that resulted in bitter defeat. Before every race, we'll look back at the previous year's result and consult the current form guide, and we'll be in your feed after every Grand Prix dissecting the outcome and what it means for the championship. So for your regular hit of Formula One analysis, subscribe to the F1 Strategy Report wherever you get your favorite podcasts. The Strategy Report is a Beer Mogul podcast on the Evergreen Podcasts Network. My name's Michael Laminato, and I'll catch you after the checkered flag.